Hey, it's Rod Kirby, and welcome to The Rod Kirby Show, the podcast that covers the ever-expanding world of film and entertainment. Today, I'm talking to filmmaker, playwright, and author extraordinaire Tymeka Chambliss. We discuss her journey as a filmmaker, how breast cancer changed her life, and much more. I had the opportunity to watch the premiere of her latest short film, a controversial project called Timothy. The film highlights the dynamics between the Black church and the LGBTQ plus community. We take a deep dive into that and so many other topics. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the interview right here on The Rod Kirby Show. Hello and welcome to The Rod Kirby Show. I'm your host, Rod Kirby, screenwriter, director, and producer. And today I have a very special guest, the fabulous Miss Tymeka Chambliss. Hello, Tymeka. How are you doing today?
Hi, Rod. I'm great. How are you?
Pretty good. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Taking out a little time to hang out with us here.
Absolutely.
We appreciate that.
Thank you.
For everyone that's watching, if you don't know, this young lady here is pretty much a superstar in my book. Okay. So you are a breast cancer survivor and thriver.
Yeah.
Right. You're a filmmaker, you're a writer, I would say a poet as well. <there's> somewhere. You got some poetry going on. A playwright and so much more. Tymeka, what is going on with you? You're just everywhere and all over the place.
I'm all over the place. You know, I just what I do is I just kind of cluster everything into content creation. Actually what I do, I just tell them I'm a content creator, whether that's publishing books, writing short films, producing short films, theater productions, television shows, whatever. Everything is just kind of under that one umbrella of content creation. And, you know, it's funny because before the term content creator came out, it's what I've always done, you know, whether in church, you know, trying to do script, you know, skits and dances in church, or, you know, creating stuff for my children. It's just always creativity has always just been a part of my being, you know.
Right.
So now that we have this newfound term, content creator, that's pretty much what I've adopted for myself.
I hear that.
What do they call it? I am a current content creator. So
and I would add a multi-hyphenate. You know, you got title upon title upon title.
Call me Slash.
Hey, I love it. Yeah, I for myself, I kind of take on the mantle of storyteller, you know, and visual storyteller, and I think that really speaks to who I am. And what's interesting though, like I'm a filmmaker, but I am the worst person to tell a physical story to you. Like in person, if we were talking and I tried to tell a story, I would just mumble it up and jumble it and it would be terrible. But I can tell you a good visual story, you know, in a video.
Right.
And I can tell a story there. So I don't know. That's just something weird about me.
Yeah. You know, I'm the same way. It's like your mind is trying to, for me, how I describe it is my brain is my mouth is moving faster than my brain. So I'm trying to get all of this out at one time. My brain is like, okay, slow down, because we're trying to figure out what you're saying.
Right.
So I have to, I have the exact same issue. So I tell people all the time, if you want to know something about me, do not ask. Don't tell me to tell you. Ask me questions so my brain can process what I'm trying to say.
I hear that. Well, Tymeka, where did your creative journey begin? And when did you know that you want to be a filmmaker?
Well, I started writing, like really writing, when I was 10 years old. I wrote this poem, I'll never forget it. It's called My Best Friend. And it was like six lines and it rhymed and it was just really cute, you know, for a 10-year-old. And I still have it. It's somewhere around here. But when I wrote it, I was like, oh, this is cute. You know, at 10 years old, I'm like, this is the greatest thing in the world. You know, so I just always wrote. So every time I was even having an extremely great day or having an extremely bad day, I would always revert to writing about my day. And I would always kind of put it into a poetry form. So when you say I'm a poet, it's really interesting, because that's how my writing actually began. Just writing these little short, you know, poems as a child. And so by the time I got 16, you know, just dealing with different things as a teenager, I made the decision to write a book called Pieces of My Heart. I never published it. I didn't really know what to do at that time. Lord have mercy. What it was, 1990. five.
Oh, way back when.
Way back when, you know. Yeah. So I didn't really understand the publishing process and all that. So I just kind of like tucked it in my folder that, like I said, I still have. And so that pretty much kind of started it. Being in church my whole life, you know, in the youth department, creating skits for youth services and dances and all of that wonderful stuff. I've always just had this this creativity, you know. It's like I don't feel complete if I'm not creating,
right?
And so that has always been the thing. So I'm originally from New Orleans, Louisiana, and we ended up moving to Memphis in 2000 2001, because my dad's a pastor.
Okay.
And I moved to Memphis for ministry purposes, praise God. And I ended up getting, and this is a long story, but I'm gonna try to go ahead.
Hey, you're good. We want to hear it.
Okay.
We want all the tea.
Let me tell y'all all the tea. Okay.
All the tea.
So moved to Memphis. Culture shock. I mean, it was just, I was like, it took me years to just develop the liking for Memphis.
Oh, wow.
This is not my home, you know. It's my home now. Before, when I, you know, when I first moved here, I was like, oh my God, it was just, it was a culture shock to me. And so, you know, working in the ministry with my dad, you know, he put me over to youth department again. And so I wanted to develop just different things for children that I didn't have. You know, right. So we're going to start a dance team. We're going to start a drill team. We're going to do Bible quizzes. You know, all of this stuff. And so I had all of these great ideas, you know, and I'm like, we got all these beautiful children. So let's, you know, I'm like the little mastermind, you know, like, let's put it all together. And so I ended up getting married in, Lord have mercy, 2004. And when I got married, my life shifted from being this creative person to now wanting to just be the perfect wife.
Oh, okay. You know?
And so I kind of lost my flow in a sense. And, you know, just life happened again. And, you know, that didn't work out. 13 years later, I was like, okay, God. I automatically just went right back to writing. You know, I got involved into theater in Memphis, community theater, you know, did a lot of different productions with independent independent writers, independent theater production producers.
Okay.
You know, I did some work with Hattie Lou, did some work with Murray. Oh, goodness. Brandon McMillan.
Yeah, Brandon's a cool guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I was the lead actress in his show, Meet the Jacksons. That's probably like one of my most, that's probably my favorite production I've ever been in outside of Simply Alone. And so I just did a lot of work. And then I ended up getting pregnant. And when I got pregnant, I was like, okay, I can't do theater right now. What am I going to do? And so in 2014, I started back writing. And in 2015, I started writing a production called When Love Lies. Didn't know what I was going to do with it when I got pregnant. Yeah, when I got pregnant in 2016, I was like, you know what? I'm not doing theater. How about finishing it up? You know, so I'm walking around with a belly and a baby inside of me trying to finish up a production. You know, had her in February. Made the decision in December of the same year, you know what, I'm going to go ahead on and put on my own production. And so When Love Lies was birthed. And that's what, that was the catalyst to me wanting to put my work out. Because it's totally different saying I'm a writer at home and then putting your work out for the world to see and criticize.
That's true.
You know, and so I sat down and I was like, okay, God, I don't have a penny. I don't have a quarter, a nickel, or a dime. Okay, so how are we going to do this? And when I tell you that God just really worked it all out, where I was able to find sponsors, I was able to find people that was just like, you know, hey, I just want to donate to your vision. And it worked out. It really, really worked out perfectly. So that's my journey into becoming a content.
Thus far.
Thus far, right.
Thus far, yeah.
We and you know, to the rest of it.
I'll tell you, it's so interesting that you said that, you know, God made a way for you, because I find a lot of my projects, and to tell you a quick secret, I'm a self-taught filmmaker. I didn't know anything about video production. I didn't know anything about screenwriting or filmmaking at all. Maybe 10 years ago, I didn't know anything. I always knew that I wanted to make movies. I just didn't know how. And God took me on my own journey to get me to the point that I am now, which is amazing. And I think that for anyone watching, if you have a dream, if you have something in your heart that you really desire to do, if you just seek out, you know, God's help, he'll help you get there.
Absolutely. I'm a firm believer in God, you know, and it's not just because I've been in church, because honey, it's a whole lot of PKs that they don't have nothing to do with Jesus.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But I have my own personal experience with God and my own personal walk, you know, and I realized that, you know, God gives us these talents and these gifts to utilize to bless others. But in the same token, you know, we have to be dependent on him in a sense where we realize, okay, God, you gave me this gift and I'm going to use it to the best of my ability. And in return, I'm hoping and I'm expecting you to work out this whole, you know, like I always tell people, you know, we always ask God, okay, God, show me what you want me to do. All right. Now, when you show me what you want me to do, I'm gonna leave it up to you as to how it's gonna get done. That's pretty much been my motto, you know, for my whole life. It's like I'm gonna do the why, how it's gonna get done. That's not even my problem.
That ain't your problem, right? Yeah. And also, whoever's watching, if you ask God to do it for you, don't be scared when he shows up for you. You know, if you ask for it, go ahead into it and walk with it.
Absolutely, because he's gonna do it.
He's gonna do it.
It's like you can't be like, okay, God, look, I need you to do this, and he poof, here you go. You're like, oh wait a minute, that came too fast.
Right, I'm not ready for it. Let me go get my hair done. I need a team. I need this. I need that. No. If you ask for it, and it's in his will, and he wants you to have it, he'll make it happen. Absolutely. Don't be scared once it shows up.
That's right. Like they say, be ready. Anyway, okay.
There you go.
Just make sure you're ready for it because it's coming.
Absolutely. So is there a particular person or place or even a thing that kind of drives your ambition as a storyteller?
My children. So my kids are me times 1,000.
Okay.
When it comes down to creativity.
Right.
At my book, Pink Hope, my characters are my children. When Love Lies was kind of sort of based off different parts of my life. My daughter, actually, she starred. She was one of the actresses in it. And we actually used the actual relationship displayed the relationship that she was having with her dad in the play. So she actually was acting herself out. And we took like just different clips of their conversations and included it into the play. So yeah, my children, my grandmother, who I love to pieces, she actually passed away. And she passed away a year before I did my first production. So she never got a chance to see it, but she definitely drives, you know, just her memory definitely fuels my passion for what I do. And my family, you know, I have probably, and everybody says this, but I really believe I got like the best family in the world, because my mom and my dad, my sisters, it's five of us. I have two sisters, two brothers. Mm-hmm. I'm the oldest of all of them. You know, I have my babies, my biological children. Then I have my extended children from my previous marriage. I got three on that side.
Wow. So got a village.
If I add up all of everybody, I got about seven kids, only two that I've heard.
Wow. Yeah. You got a whole production crew right there.
Right. But they all are part of my passion and why I do what I do, because one of the things that I've learned growing up is that, you know, my mom, she didn't get a chance to, how can I put this? She didn't get a chance to follow her dreams. You know, because she had four kids, you know, she raised us. And I saw as we got older, she realized, okay, now what do I do? You know, she didn't really have that. And then she got to a certain point where she was like, well, you know, I'm too old to do it. Not which she's not, because honey, she's still young and she feisty and everything. But for me, I wanted to make sure that my children saw me working and not just working a 9-to-5. but work in my visions, my goals, and my dreams, you know, allowing them to understand that, listen, if I could do it with three kids,
yes,
a full-time job, you know, dealing with breast cancer and all, everything else, you have no excuse.
Right.
And so it's just one of those things I wanted my children, because like they say, you know, if children see it done, they know that they can do it, you know, and that's on both sides, positive and negative, you know. So I'm very passionate about how I live my life before them and the things that I do before them.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, let's talk about your latest project. It is called Timothy. It's a short film, and you describe it as a short film that tackles the emotional and spiritual challenges between the Black church and the LGBTQ plus community. Tell me about that project. Where did this all come about from?
So Timothy, I actually wrote it in 2019. I was cooking. Those that know me know I love cooking. So that's just what I do. And I was cooking and this idea just kind of came to me and I was like, I wonder if I could write a short film about something, you know? And so I just started, after I finished cooking that night, I just came and sat on my laptop and I just started typing and I actually finished it that day. And I was like, oh, this is actually kind of good, you know? So I called actually the guy who's in the poster. His name is Artavius Veazey. And so I called him and I was like, hey, Tay, because he played in Love Lies. And I was like, hey, I got an idea for, you know, a short film. And so I sent it to him and everything. And he was like, girl, we got to do this, you know. And so being in church my whole life, I've seen the good, bad, ugly, and everything in between. And one of the things that I've realized, and not just with the Black church, but just with the church.
Right, the church.
Right. And how
church body,
the church body, you know, and how we have created this before cancel culture became a phenomenon. We have always had this level of cancel culture when it came down to individuals that identify with the LGBTQ plus community, you know, and it's one of those things. And you know, I'm an advocate for love. That's why I always wear my shirt, equality, because for me, everybody, no matter who it is, everybody is deserving of love. God loves all of us, no matter what our walk is, no matter where our life takes us. And some kind of way, as the body of Christ, we've lost that level of unconditional love. You know, our love has become so conditional to the point where we put a time frame on people's deliverance. You know, it's like, okay, you came to the church Sunday and you gay. You got 2 weeks for the Lord to deliver you. So you ain't gay no more. You know, and then, you know, of course, Andrew Caldwell came out with the whole, I don't like men's no more. You know, so this has become, that fueled, you know, the conditional love that we've shown in the church, you know, versus allowing people to be people, you know, and allowing God to do the rest. It's not our job to tell a person, I need you to be delivered by tomorrow.
Right.
That's not my job, is to love you. And there's a quote that says, I'm going to love the hell out of you. You know, so whatever is in you, I'm gonna love you so much to the point where it comes out on, you know, and it's something that you make the decision to change. And so I think that for me with the short film Timothy, it was one of those things where I just really wanted to, and it's a very controversial film, you know what I'm saying? We've gotten a lot of great feedback. We've gotten a lot of questions like, okay, what in the world? You know, especially me being a PK, people like, I know you did not miss, you know? And I'm like, I did, because it's something that as a body of Christ, we have got to tackle this challenge, you know, whether it's through film, through conversation, you know, through talks, through conferences, whatever it is. But it's time for us as a body to allow everyone, you know, the church is, like they said, the church is a hospital. If you sit, you know what I'm saying? You're not going to go to Pizza Hut. If you're sick, you're not going to go to the gas station. If you're sick, you go to the hospital. And people mm-hmm. that come to the church, they realize that they need Jesus. Because if we didn't need Jesus, we wouldn't be there. And so what we have done is that we have caused a ripple, a rift in how we love people, you know, and we've caused this divisive, our divisive behavior when it comes down to how we treat people that live a different life from us. You know, it has definitely caused a major issue in the church. So now you have people who are part of the LGBTQ plus community that love God, that right. are being used by God, but they can't come to our church. You know what I'm saying? And so it's like now we tell you, okay, you need Jesus. You need to go to church. But when they come to the church, oh, you can't stay here. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, where are they going to go? You know? And so for me, that's what Timothy is all about. It's, you know, it's about just telling the story of a young man, you know, who hasn't necessarily, whose family didn't know that he was living this lifestyle, you know? And so it just kind of, it's a very short journey of how they handled it as a pastor's life and how he handled it as a son.
Well, I want to take a look at the trailer, but before we do that, just for anyone that's watching or listening that may not know, can you break down what a PK is just so they understand? where you're coming from and why it's so controversial in comparison to your film?
Gotcha. So a PK is a preacher's kid. And Timothy is a preacher's kid. His dad is Pastor Lamont Taylor. His mom is First Lady Treva Taylor. And they are pastors of this huge multi-million dollar mega church in Millington, Tennessee. And they have no idea that their son is gay.
Okay. So I'm going to review your film like right now. Okay.
Oh, goodness. Let me drink some water. Hold on. I'm nervous.
Okay, so I had the opportunity and the pleasure to watch your film, and I absolutely loved it. I loved the direction. I loved the score and the music was great. The sound was good. And I'll tell you one thing, because a lot of people don't know this, but this is your first short film. Am I right?
Yes.
This is your first short film. So a lot of people, what they really skimp on is they skimp on the post-production process. They skip on, you know, having really good sound and, you know, decent picture quality. Everyone can forgive, you know, picture quality. It's okay. You can shoot with an iPhone. People will forgive you, but they cannot forgive is really bad audio, and your audio sounded great. Okay. So really thumbs up on all that. So I loved your film. I give it an A+. It was awesome.
That's so awesome. Yeah. It was my first short film. I was nervous. I'm going to be honest with you. It took me a year to make the decision to even put it out, because I was afraid of the feedback from the church.
Right.
Funny thing, my mom and my dad has not seen it at all. And I'm like, oh, Jesus.
Oh, Lord.
I don't think that they're ready for it. I don't know, you know, because it's one of those things. And one of the questions that I was asked was, so you got the pastor cursing? And I said, I do. And so that was another thing that people were kind of questioning was, why would I have the pastor cussing? And the funny thing is that 2 days before this came out,
Lord, don't you say that. Don't you say what I'm think you're about to say. Go ahead. Go on and say it.
2 days before.
Come on, Kirk Franklin.
Here go Kirk Franklin. I was like, you know, but not excusing it, but showing the reality of what really happens. Yeah. You know, no matter what platform you stand on, no matter, you know, how much you speak in tongues, roll on the floor, spit up, run around the church, whatever, everybody has a breaking point.
Absolutely.
And a lot of times in those breaking points, we tend to use vernacular that may not necessarily line up with the word of God. You know, we may not act a certain way, you know, because I mean, if you piss me off and I mean, you hurt my children, or you know what I'm saying? Don't expect me to sit around here and saying going up to yonder, because you are going to go up to yonder. You're going to get this fire. You know what I'm saying? So those things where it's just really understanding. And again, it goes back to allowing people to be people. You know, I think that we have created this culture of perfection that people can't live up to, you know, and then when they don't live up to this standard of perfection, then, oh, we want to cancel you. We want to talk about you. We want to, you know, dog you out, and we want to judge you and say, oh, I knew he wasn't all that. But when we just allow people to be people and allow God to be God, then we can live in a society where everyone is welcomed.
Hmm. Wow. And for those that are watching and or listening, and if you want to watch the short film Timothy, it is on Facebook, I do believe, at the Black Box Pro on Facebook. Check that out. It's really, really good. And it's a great conversation starter. It really is. It's a conversation that needs to happen between the church and, you know, groups that they deem to be, you know, to not have that conversation in church. You know,
absolutely.
That's awesome. So with Timothy, so since this was your first short film, how did you tackle this project compared to your other projects like Toxic or When Love Lies?
This one was a lot different because we're still in COVID season. And so, you know, we had to, and it was, when I say you got to work this whole thing out, because I was scared. I was like, Lord, you know, I don't want nobody coming over here with the coronavirus. You know, and I was like, Jesus, how are we going to do this? And so literally the week before we filmed, Memphis had a snowstorm. So everybody was automatically quarantined, you know, before we even filmed. And so Keytrick, he flew in from Colorado. DP flew in from Colorado. You know, had to get their COVID test done, you know, pre-quarantine and all of that. And it was just the perfect thing because I wanted to have snow. We had snow, but it wasn't so cold and it wasn't, you know, there was no ice on the ground. So we were able to maneuver, you know, and still keep the beauty of the season, you know, in it. And so I ended up watching a month before that, I watched Malcolm and Marie on Netflix.
Love that. That was a great movie.
Oh my God. Yeah. I was like, what? If I could write, I just need you to give me, honey, the words to write because it's so beautiful. And when I saw it, I was like, I need Timothy in black and white. And so that's what gave me the idea to put it in black and white. Because I wanted it, you know, so many times we see colors and, you know, even with the LGBT plus community, rainbow and all that. I wanted to filter out all of that and just allow us to see the essence of the people and allow the viewers to create whatever color they think that she's wearing. So maybe she's wearing purple to you. Maybe she's wearing blue to you. Maybe she's wearing green. You know, I wanted the audience to be able to create their own world of colors, but ultimately not missing the essence of the characters. And so that was the whole purpose of us doing the black and white. But we filmed everything at my house. We filmed at a church around the corner, you know, the outside, and we filmed everything in one day. It took us about maybe about 8 hours to know, film everything. And the DP, we sat down, I gave him my vision for what I wanted the trailer to look like. Funny thing, the trailer is actually in reverse. except for two parts when they're walking into the house, and there's another part that's not in reverse, but everything else is actually in reverse. And so, yes, my brain just be going, you know.
Got a little Chris Nolan going on in there.
Right. You know, because I was like, I told the DP, I was like, okay, I have this idea. Sit down before I tell you. He was like, what you talking about? I said, the trailer in reverse. He said, what? I was like, yeah, and just like jumble all the words, do voiceovers. And so we had this whole conversation and he was like, okay, cool, let's do it. And so, yeah, everything was in reverse, but you know, ultimately I wanted to make sure, and it was a beautiful piece because everybody embodied the characters so perfectly, you know, Ladea as the first lady, Kietrich as the pastor, Tay as Timothy. And before I even knew Tay's story, it's so funny because when I sent him the script, he was like, girl, that's my story. I
said, wow.
He was like, yes. He was like, this is my story, you know, and we battled. We didn't know how it was going to end until the day of the filming. I wrote like two different endings, and I was like, it just didn't speak to me. And I was like, okay. So when we started filming the scene where he's in the room, I was like, And so we were talking through it while he was filming. I was just giving him directions while we were filming. I said, okay, let's do this, let's do that. He was just going with it. And so he actually, how we ended it, we made that decision at that moment of how it was going to end. So yeah,
it worked out. I loved it.
Yeah, yeah, it really did work out. I'm very proud of this piece. Not just because it's my first short film, but because of what it stands for, you know, and the fact that I'm hoping that it does start the conversation.
That's awesome. And so are you planning on doing a film festival run, or what's your plans for Timothy?
Yeah. So we're going to be submitting it to a few film festivals. Kietrich is pretty much, he's walking me through the whole thing because I didn't know it was like a million film festivals.
Yeah, it's a lot of them.
I'm like, what? Where have I been all my life? You know?
They're all like regionally based. And then you got some that are, you know, there's some that are Christian, there are some that are Black, there are some that are, you know, it's crazy.
Crazy. And I was like, going through them. I think I submitted one to like a film festival in India. I submitted one to a film festival in Canada. And I'm just like, oh my God, this, I didn't know what to choose. And I'm like, well, first let's start off with the free ones, you know, and then we'll work out. Well, I'll work our way down, you know?
Right.
But, so far I think, we've submitted it to about 20 film festivals.
Great.
So yeah, so we'll see how it goes. And, you know, we'll just, you know, I don't really know the whole process with the film festivals, but we did everything through Film Freeway.
Film Freeway,
yeah. So I'm hoping that, you know, we get some feedback from it. That would be pretty cool.
Did you enter Indie Memphis?
I did.
Excellent, because, you know, as a hometowner, you get that in for free. So
yes, I was like,
excellent.
It's like, hallelujah, Lord.
Yes, because they can get expensive now. I mean, especially if you run into these late deadlines, they can get really expensive.
Yes.
So the earlier, the better.
Absolutely.
So let's shift gears for just a second. Okay. And I'm, you know, so proud of you with what you did with Timothy, and I wish nothing but the best of luck in your film festival run. I know you're going to do great, but tell me about December 26, 2019. What happened on that day?
I was diagnosed with breast cancer. I was at work. It was the day after Christmas, and it was 4:59 p.m.
Wow.
And I was just getting ready to get off work, and I got a call from my doctor, and she said, how are you? Are you sitting down, and are you alone? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm okay. Yes, I'm sitting down. Yes, I'm alone. And she proceeded to tell me that I was diagnosed with DCIS, which is a low-grade form of breast cancer. And my world just, like, stopped in that moment. I was like, okay. I was not expecting to be diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of 40.
Right.
I was like, oh, my God. What, you know, my daughter, my baby was 2 years old at the time. You know, I didn't know what to do, you know, and so I did make up my mind. I knew what I wasn't going to do. I knew I wasn't going to die from it. I made my mind up. I was like, no, God, honey, I will not be dying from this.
Right.
Whatever we have to do to get through it, we're going to do it, you know. And so I was supposed to have a lumpectomy. COVID came in. The city shut down a week before I was supposed to go in for my lumpectomy surgery. And so we ended up having to push it back. And we pushed it to June. And the closer I got to June, something just kept, and I know it was God, but, you know, it was God really impressing on my heart to just have a full mastectomy. And I was like, I do not want to do this. You know what I'm saying? And so I made the decision to do a full mastectomy. Thank God I did, because when they went back and tested the material and everything, I mean, tested the tissue and stuff, they found a whole nother mass on the other side of that they originally saw. So I would have had to have a mastectomy done anyway. And so it did go from, you know, a low grade to, I think it was like stage one or early stage two, you know, breast cancer. And so that journey in itself was, because I literally, the 2 weeks before I was diagnosed with breast cancer, I had just finished filming the pilot for Toxic. And I was like, this is great. Life is going wonderful. I'm feeling doing my thing. You know what I'm saying? And when I got diagnosed with breast cancer, I had to make a decision. Okay, either I need to decide, am I going to keep going with filming, or am I going to take a break and really focus on my health? And so I made that decision to take a break and focus on my health. And so, yeah, that's what happened on December 26, 2019.
So when you were diagnosed and you had your procedure done in June, you said, right?
Yes.
After that, about how long did it take for you to get back on the creativity train?
A week. it was, I'm gonna tell you how crazy this was. When I tell you, like, this is crazy. I came home, had surgery on January the 3rd. I came home the evening of January the 4th. And so I woke up on the 5th, and this phrase, didn't know where it came from. The phrase was Pink Hope. And I was like, Pink Hope? Like, I literally woke up and I was like, okay, I'm just going to hold on to it. Because sometimes God does that. He'll just give me like these little quick little phrases. And I'm like, okay, I don't really know what I'm supposed to do with it, but let me just hold on to it. And so the next, a week, let's see, this was the 5th. A week to the day, it was the 10th of June. I was asleep. And while I was asleep, I just saw this storyline, like literally just flash before my eyes. It was the craziest thing. And I woke up and I was like, where's my laptop? Pulled up my laptop, started typing. And I ended up writing Pink Hope and the Hope Leaders, which is a children's book. Because going through breast cancer, I didn't really know how to explain to my children breast cancer. Right. So I always just tell them, you know, mommy's having issues with her boobs and mommy has to go get them fixed. You know, because for me, I didn't want to say something that would cause them to, that would incite fear in them. You know,
concern and fear.
You know, and cancer is a word where it's like, when you hear cancer, it's like, oh my God, are you going to die? You know, so I didn't want them to have those questions. And so we would just always have this little running joke, you know? And so my children was actually staying with my sister at the time when I wrote it, and I wrote it in like 2.5 hours. And
The whole book.
The whole book. Yeah. Wow. And I finished writing it. I called my sister. I was like, Kiki, I was like, I wrote a book. I was like, I need you to read it. And my oldest daughter was staying with her, my girls were staying with her, you know, while I was recovering. I said, let Lila read it. I really want to know, you know, what she thinks. And so I emailed it over to her, and she called me back like 1.5 hours crying on the phone. And she was like, did you really write this? And I was like, yeah, she said, oh my gosh, she said, I'm sitting here crying. She said, Lila read it and she didn't know you wrote it. She loved the book. She said, and I explained to her that you wrote it. So that was my avenue to explain to my children my diagnosis at the time. And so I made the decision a month later, because I didn't know if I really wanted to publish it. Was like, I don't know what I'm gonna do with this, but I'm hold on to it. And so a month later, I made the decision to publish it. Tracy found someone, actually one of his one of his workers, they illustrated it. I sent it over to the editor. You know, we made adjustments to it. My sister Nakia, she's a pediatric nurse, so she was my co-writer. After I sent it over to her, she gave me a lot of great feedback, because like I told her, I wanted to make sure that I stayed as close to the accuracy of breast cancer, and also making sure that children, you know, ages 8 to 12 can understand it. And so she became my co-writer. The editors helped me with the editing process. We got it illustrated. And we released it the beginning of this month.
So, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. So I'm just like super excited about it. Woo. Pink Hope. And it has coloring pages in it. You know, I'm really big on creativity. And so I wanted to be able to create a book where children can be creative. And so it has coloring pages in it where children can actually create their own color for Pink Hope and the children and the Hope Factory and all of that wonderful stuff.
Yeah, that's so awesome. And people can find that book at your website, which is the website itself is called The Hope Factory. Is that correct?
So the website is called The Hope Factory. The web address is hoperulestheworld.com.
There we go.
Yes.
Hoperulestheworld.com. And I love the website because it has a lot of resources for cancer, breast cancer survivors, of people that are dealing with that. And also, I love how you, in your story, you're talking about how you didn't know what things to eat or what activities to do to help you with that journey. So that's an awesome resource for people and women that are dealing with that.
Absolutely. You know, going through it, I just realized that, especially for Black women, we didn't have a central location of resources for us. And so I was like, this might be a great thing to create, you know, not only for me, but just for other women that are dealing with, and especially mothers, because I mean, you know, it's one thing to have to deal with breast cancer. It's another thing where you got to deal with breast cancer and you got to find your own resources and find people to help you and all that. So I just wanted to be able to create, you know, just a central location. And we're still updating it as we connect with other organizations in and out of Memphis, Tennessee. But I wanted to just be able to have this central location for mothers and for women who've been diagnosed with breast cancer.
Fantastic. And you have any plans on maybe adapting Pink Hope into a film or a series or anything like that?
So, yeah. So actually we're in the process of,
breaking news. Breaking news right here. You hear it first. Rod Kirby Show.
So Pink Hope, the book, is actually for ages 7 to 12. So when people, you know, people say, well, yeah, 7 to 12, you know, and so people, when they hear children's book, they automatically think it's for toddlers.
Right.
But it's actually for, you know, 7 to 12 age range. But we're actually in the process of creating another version of Pink Hope and the Hope Leaders for toddlers, where it'll incorporate their sight words. It'll incorporate big words, big pictures, everything is going to be on a grander scale, you know, with the dialogue shortened for smaller kids, and we'll have their sight words highlighted in it. They'll have, you know, bookmarkers in it. We're trying to create the workbook for them. So that will be available. The goal is to have it available by May, by the end of May, so that they, because what I'm gonna tell you what happened was, this daycare in Memphis, Tennessee purchased like 8 books. And she called me and she was like, Tamika, she said, girl, all the kids think that they're superheroes now. And so, she was like, are you planning on creating a book for toddlers? And at the time we were already in the talk, you know, about doing that, but she kind of confirmed it. And so we're trying to also find a vendor that can create the actual pink capes for us, so we can include that into the books. So when daycares purchase it, you know, they'll also provide capes for the kids.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a journey, and we're building, you know, Pink Hope actual costumes. So we can partner, because we're interested in partnering. Well, let me not say that. I was connected with a lady who is a part of the group. It's a superhero group that goes to Le Bonheur and St. Jude, you know, and they dress up as all the superheroes. And so she reached out to me and she was like, we want Pink Hope to be a part of it. So we're actually in the process of getting her costume built so that Pink Hope
can be
a real live person.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. Really awesome. Well, that's just amazing. And I love your story. I love your journey. And, you know, I really, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, what God does through you next. You know, and I hope you're excited too, because I know he's got a lot to do with you, and he's going to work a lot through you as well.
Yes. I'm excited. You know, I told God a few years ago, I said, God, if you bless me to be able to be, you know, somewhat financially okay, I'm going to make sure, and I promise God that I will use my resources to be a blessing and to help other people. And you know, this journey, you know, it's expensive writing a children's book and getting it illustrated. It's not cheap at all.
Right.
You know, it goes right back to what I said at the beginning. I told God I'm gonna do it. And it was up to him how it was going to get done, you know. Mm-hmm. And so he worked it all out to the point where I was able to get everything done within my own personal price range, you know. And so now we're working on Purple Hope, which is Alzheimer's. My other sister, who's a nurse practitioner, she's my co-writer for that book. And my grandfather, he died of Alzheimer's. And so we're writing a book. And my baby, she's the lead character in it. And
okay.
So she'll get a chance to, because my other two characters in Pink Hope, those are my other two kids. So you know, we're in the process of building that. And so it's just this long, you know, going through breast cancer, I realized that there are moments where you just lose hope. You know, you're just like, okay, God, I don't know why I'm going through this. And so I wanted to build a hope series, you know, for various diseases and illnesses so that those people that are going through it understand that, you know, hope is always there, even when you don't feel it. And hope is just a symbol for God, you know, and just allowing people to understand that they are yet and still deserving of hope, regardless of what they're going through.
That's awesome. That's amazing. Tamika, thank you so much for joining us on the Rod Kirby Show. You're such an amazing artist and writer and director. So glad to have you on here. How can we reach out to you and connect with you?
You can reach out to me on any social media platform, Facebook, Instagram. I think I'm even on Snapchat. I'm on TikTok. I'm on LinkedIn. And all of it is under Tamika Chambliss. It's only one of me in the whole wide world. So if you Google me, you're going to find me.
And you can check out the links on the screen there. And if you're looking for Tamika's production company, which is Black Box Productions, it is at blackbox901.com. You can also find them, the Black Box Pro on Facebook, as well as the official Black Box Pro on Instagram. Thank you all for joining us. Have a great day.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Rod Kirby Show. For more tips and advice for aspiring filmmakers, visit my website at www.rodkirby.com. While you're there, don't forget to sign up for my newsletter, The Independent. It features content from my blog, upcoming screenwriting competitions, events, and more. Thanks again for listening, and I'll talk to you again soon.